Can you give us a snapshot of how many different watch lists there are and whether or not they are at all commingled?
Well, that's a great question. It's one of the things that the government's been trying to do since September 11th is to consolidate these lists. The master list, which is called TIDE, is actually held by the National Counterterrorism Center, and it's quite extensive. But underneath that are the lists that are actually maintained by the FBI's run terrorist screening center, which are the ones that actually identify individuals for additional screening or even not being able to fly on U.S. flights into the United States.
So it sounds like there's three levels. There's the TIDE, which is what the data mart, they call that, the data mart environment. And then there's the terrorist watch list, and then there's the no-fly list. And it seems to be the break between who should be on the no-fly list. In other words, should they graduate from the terrorist watch list? Is that the problem?
Well, yeah, absolutely, Tom. It can be a problem. It's something they continue to manage, and clearly from this incident, it's something that we're going to have to continue to get better at. There are certain legal restrictions that the intelligence community has to abide by that includes a natural barrier in there to ensure that we don't violate the rights and civil liberties of individuals, of U.S. citizens, or folks that are flying in and out of the United States.
It seems that that was a similar situation that took place with the shooter at Fort Hood, Major Hassan, that there is certain information that you can't share, one agency can't share with another agency just because of, some protections or civil liberties that were built in. So now we're running up against this in several different circumstances. Is there anything that we could do, that agencies could do, to sort of share this information more efficiently? Efficiently or effectively, in your view?
Well, Gene, that's a great question, and that's what we're getting back to here, is that to be successful against this continued terrorist threat, the United States is going to have to wrestle with this issue of civil liberties and how much risk we're willing to take versus how much civil liberties we're willing to give up. Certainly, the information sharing failed to a degree with the Hassan case. Certainly, it failed to a degree with this case. And NCTC, the National Counterterrorism, and the FBI are going to have to continue to improve the way we share information. There's never going to be a point in the U.S. government where we say we've reached perfect information sharing. It's going to be an ever-evolving process that they're going to continue to have to work at.
But haven't we really reached a bizarre situation where, in our fear of violating anyone's rights, we end up trampling on everybody, all Americans and every single person coming to the United States with some pretty strange rules that are being developed when all we had to do is just to pull a few people out of line? And isn't it better to maybe have a couple people maybe that shouldn't be on the no-fly list by accident than to penalize the millions and millions of people who fly every day?
Well, again, that's a great question. And we go back to something like the full body scans, where there's technology out there that exists, as you mentioned in the lead-in, where you probably could have detected this incident or this individual carrying the explosives, but we haven't been implementing it a little bit because of cost, but mainly because of concerns from the civil liberty groups. If we have this as mandatory screening, you could actually probably increase the speed at which we went through security, and you would actually make things a little bit safer. But again, there's a lot of pushback from the civil liberties groups and from the American population about whether they want to have this type of screening.
All right. Well, talking this morning to Rick Nelson, Director of Homeland Security Programs at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Well, Mr. Nelson, we should probably step back a little bit and just let you describe what you think were the errors that took place in screening this gentleman as he got aboard an aircraft in Amsterdam, and what could have been or should have been done differently, or what should happen at this point to stop this from going forward.
Well, there's going to have to be changes on two fronts, and one is there's going to have to be, again, the improved on the information sharing. The information that was received over Nigeria was actually sent to the NCTC database based on information that I've been told and incorporated it there. However, there's got to be some analysis to figure out why this information wasn't passed to the terrorist screening center. If it was, why it was determined that individual did not make the next lower down list. That's going to have to be solved. And we're going to continue to have to solve the technology issue as well. Currently, this is not a new technique. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, used to chemical PETN to try to conduct a similar attack, you know, a few years ago. Now this individual has done this, so clearly the technology we have in place is not sufficient to thwart this kind of attack, and that's going to have to change. I think that the interesting thing we have to take into account here is, you know, even if we go back to September 11th, that our front line defense to these attacks ends up being the people that are actually in the planes. You know, we can rely on the government to a degree to prevent these terrorist attacks, and they have majority of the burden. But it's also the awareness of the individual passengers and the citizens in the street. As you see, they were the ones that were able to, again, thwart this attack. The airlines from Flight 93, they thwarted that attack, and they were even involved in the Richard Reid attack to agree as well. So it's good to see that the average American citizens are very aware, and they need to and are actually very, very useful in keeping us safe.
And getting back to that technology question, what about the sniffer machines? Those haven't come up as much, where they blow air and the air that comes off the person might indicate some harmful substance. Seems like that might have worked there too. Are those widely deployed? Is that something that can be deployed further?
Again, you have to be pulled aside for screening. Not everyone that goes through the airport screening goes through the chemical analysis. If they had, if this individual had gone through the chemical analysis, it's likely that he would have been, the explosive residue would have been detected on his hands, and he would have been caught. But however, as most of us know, as we go through, only a certain number of individuals are screened. And one of the reasons why that's done is just for the randomness acts, point one, one, to speed up travel through, and two, to make sure that it's random. That's one of the things that we saw after this attempted attack on Christmas Day, is that the airlines and the TSA started doing very different types of methodologies on the airplanes to keep people from knowing exactly what kind of screening processes we're going to go through. And that's a good change. That's something we need to see more of, is not the posting of exactly what kind of security requirements individuals are going to go through at the airport, to keep them random so folks don't know what to expect. And that's one of the best deterrents we can actually use.
And Mr. Nelson, can you tell us, would that backscatter machine have detected this, that kind of explosive sewn into someone's underwear?
Well, it's hard to prove that, but the technology would suggest that it would have been a lot easier to detect in that case. The backscatter machines are, you know, it's like an X-ray, and it's actually pretty good at identifying anomalies. Would it have stopped this? It's hard to say. The chances would have been greatly improved had he actually gone through a backscatter machine. I believe that fully.
And so you think the backscatter, what about some detection devices, you know, the swabs that they use to detect explosive materials, would that have detected if it was used?
Well, absolutely. The swabs, I think, again, it's hard to prove, but I think that if he had gone through the chemical swabbing of the, they certainly the residue would have showed up, and he would have been, you know, obviously a stop there. You know, PETN is actually something that's, you know, residue is pretty easily detected, and had he gone through that additional screening, whether it be the backscatter or been the swabbing, he probably would have been stopped. But again, it's hard to prove that.
Well, it seems like we have the technology to stop whatever it is he was carrying on board the plane from getting carried on board the plane. We just didn't, for some reason, use it. So I guess that's really the question of the day. How do you employ it and not violate people's civil rights in order to get these things to be exposed?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I think, again, we have to be able, the U.S. government has to be able to go to the American people on an incident like this, you know, and say, did you do everything that you could do? And to say that we haven't solved the intellectual debate regarding the back scanner, the full body scans, because we're stuck in this intellectual debate about, you know, civil liberties versus, you know, stopping terrorism, I think is a greater failure. I mean, we need to overcome this. And if it's a funding issue, again, you know, we spent $40 billion on airport security to date. You know, what spend what we need to spend to get this to, you know, to the right level. And those are both arguments that I don't think hold up very well. And I don't think that the American people would accept, if an attack were successful, to say that we were $5 or $10 billion short of getting the machines in there, or we just, you know, the issue was too hard to discuss in the Congress or too hard to discuss publicly for us to come up with a solution. I don't think those are viable solutions.